Today we're going to explore a theme of this week's Parsha Vayakel and Pekudei, but one that relates really to an essential, fundamental idea in Yiddishkeit, in Yahadus. Let me begin, since we're coming off Purim, with the famous notion mentioned already in Tikkunei Zohar, that Yom HaKippurim is Yom, which is Kippurim. That the day of Yom Kippur is Kippurim, it's like Purim, which really, it's brought in Sifrei Chassidus, indicates that there's something in Purim that's even greater than Yom Kippur, which is very strange. Yom Kippur is, of course, a biblical holiday. It's Min HaTorah, it's Achas Bashana, it's the holiest day of the year. Yom HaKadosh, the day of forgiveness. Purim is an added holiday later by the prophets, by the rabbis, Midivrei Sofrim. So even if you want to say there are similarities, which are also strange, because ostensibly the two most opposite days in the Jewish calendar, as far as behavior and attitude, you can't get 2 days that are more opposite than Yom Kippur and Purim. Yom Kippur is an extremely serious, intense, introspective day, and Purim has become an extremely, you know, loose day, social day, joyous, happy, drinking, partying, feasting. That's part of the mitzvahs of Purim. The advantage this year, Purim, is you didn't have to be in the car all day because nobody went out. So therefore, the few b'shagoyim who decided to be on the road were alone. Were alone on the road, on the snow and the ice. I was one of them. So, nonetheless, we not only compare Yom Kippur to Purim, but we say that Yom Kippur is Kippurim. So that's what we also want to address, but we'll leave that for later. There is something... There's something very unique in Parshas Vayakel and Pekudei. And that is, everybody knows, that Vayakel Pekudei is the story of Moshe gathering the Jewish people, instructing them to build a Mishkan, giving them all of the details that he heard from the Ribbono Shel Olam in Parshas Truma and Tetzaveh, how to construct the entire sanctuary, all of the items, all of the pieces of furniture, how to weave all of the garments of the Kohanim. And Parshas Pekudei and Vayakel accounts for his commandment, recalls his commandment, and then how they actually implemented it. We could maybe lower the speakers. Can I trouble you for a chumash there, you mind? Right behind you. Oh, it doesn't. The words, Kasher Tzivo Hashem Es Moshe, are mentioned 19 times in Parshas Pekudei. Not once, not twice, not 10 times, but 19 times. In the source sheets, I gave an example. If you'll take out your source sheet, you have it in the middle of the page. In the middle of the page you see Pasuk Chav Beis. This is the beginning of Pekudei. U'Betzalel ben Uri ben Chur l'mati Yehuda osis kol asher tziva Hashem es Moshe. Betzalel, the son of Uri, Chur from the tribe of Yehuda, did everything that Hashem commanded Moshe. V'itoy Aliyah ben Achisamach l'mati Don. His partner was Aliyah from the tribe of Don. And then he starts the actual story in detail of how they did everything. So he says, from all of these types of materials, they made the garments. They made the garments for Aaron like Hashem told Moshe. Next, as a mitznefes, they make the hat, they make the pants, as a avne, they make the gartel, kasher tziva Hashem es Moshe, like Hashem commanded Moshe. Vayasu as tzitz, They make the tzitz, which is the golden plate on the forehead of the kohen. The next, I didn't put into the source sheets all 19 times, but you have this 19 times. After every single item, after every single nuanced detail of what they constructed in the Mishkan, the Torah says, like Hashem commanded Moshe. And the obvious question is, why repeat the same word 19 times? You could say the Jews did everything like Hashem told Moshe and go through all the details. Say it in the beginning, say it at the end, say it in the middle. Say it in the beginning, in the middle, at the end. You know what they say about, somebody once told me, what's a good speech? So he says, get up, tell them what you want to tell them, then tell them, then tell them what you told them, and sit down. So, fine, say it in the beginning, 19 times, Kashatziva Hashem as Moshe. Why? What's the significance of this? There's a fascinating Talmud Yerushalmi about it, which ostensibly, at first glance, seems very perplexing. A little out of order, my source sheets here. But take a look at source sheet number 4, source number 4. It's a Purim Dika source sheet, so Bissel Andalayada. Yerushalmi Brachis Perik Dalet Halacha Gimel. The Mishnah says in the 4th chapter of Masechta Brachis. Reb Gamliel Oymer, Reb Gamliel says, B'chol Yoim Adam Ispalu Shmoyne Esrei. Every day a person davens Shmoyne Esrei 18 blessings. The Anshei Knesset HaGdoyle in the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash instituted what we call the text of Tefillah, the text of prayer, Shmoyne Esrei, consisting of 18 blessings that we recite till today in the morning, in the afternoon, and in the evening. Says the Gemara in Yerushalmi, Reb Shmuel Bar Nachmeni B'Shem Rabbi Yochanan. Reb Shmuel, the son of Nachmeni, says in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, why 18 blessings? The answer is, Keneged Yudches Tzivuyin, Shekosuv B'Parshas Mishkan Sheni. It corresponds to the 18 times it says, Kasher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe, in the second Mishkan. What does he mean in the parsha of the second Mishkan? The first Mishkan Rishon in the Yerushalmi is referring to the Mishkan of Truma and Tetzaveh, the Mishkan that God commanded Moshe to make. In Truma and Tetzaveh, Moshe is on the mountain, and Hashem says, "Va'asu li mikdash v'shachanti b'soicham," and he goes through all of the vessels and all of the items and the entire structure of the Mishkan, both on the outside and on the inside, and then in Tetzaveh he continues with that theme regarding the garments of the Kayanim, and then finally the golden altar, the golden Mizbeah. That's Mishkan Rishon. That's the first time the Mishkan is detailed in Chumash. Mishkan Sheni is Vayakal Pkudim, which is the repetition of how they actually did it, executed and implemented Hashem's commandment. And in the Mishkan Sheni it says 18 times, Kasher Tziva Hashem as Moshe, like Hashem commanded Moshe. They did this like Hashem told Moshe, they did this like Hashem told Moshe, they did that like Hashem told Moshe. That's why there's 18 blessings. Now the obvious question is, not 18 times, it's 19 times. So for us it works well because we have 19 blessings. But the Chazal, when they instituted Shmoneh Esrei, they didn't institute 19 blessings. Right? It was only Rabbi Gamliel at the end of Bayis Sheni who added the bracha of Olam Al Shinim Alti Sikrim Gamliel the Yavna. But initially it's Shmoneh Esrei, we still call it Shmoneh Esrei. So the Yerushalmi continues, Brachas Perek Dalet, Amir Reb Chiya Barba. Reb Chiya, the son of us, said, Ubilvad min v'itoy aholiyah benachi somach l'mati dom at soifu desim. As long as you know where to start counting. Where do you have to start counting? From the Pasuk, from after the Pasuk, v'itoy aholiyah benachi somach, with him was Ali Ahaliyah, the son of Achisamach, to the tribe of them, till the end of the book, till the end of Sefer Shmos, till the end of Pekudim. What does the Yerushalmi mean with this? What he means is you have to delete the first time. What's the first time? In Pasuk Chavbeis, which is the source, not after the Yerushalmi, but the one right after that, in the beginning of Parshas Pekudim, close to the beginning, in Perik Chavbeis of Pekudim, Pasuk I'm sorry, I said Perek Chav Beis. Perek Chav Aleph, Pasuk Chav Beis.
which is the second pasuk of Pekudei. It says, "Ubetzalel ben Uri ben Chur lamata Yehuda, asa es kol asher tziva Hashem es Moshe." That Yerushalmi says, take out of the equation. Where should you start from? After the next pasuk. The next pasuk reads, "V'itoya aliyah ben Achisamach lamata Yedam." Together with Betzalel was a aliyah. From there, start to count, and from there, you will find only 18 kasher tziva Hashem es Moshes, and that is the reason for the 18 blessings of Shemoneh Esrei. These are the words of the Yerushalmi, which now suddenly sheds a whole new light here. It's not just 18 times Kasher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe or 19 times, but somehow it's connected to the 18 blessings of prayer. What's the connection between Shemoneh Esrei and the 18 Kasher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe in Pekudei? Furthermore, if there's 19, why delete one? You can't put in the one that speaks about Betzalel ben Uri ben Chur, the main craftsman who built the Mishkan. He did everything like Hashem told Moshe. That's not counted. Why? What's the logic here? Memanafshech. If it's every time Hashem Tziva Hashem is Moshe, include that. If this is irrelevant, what makes it relevant only from the point of the next pasuk, which is Aliyah ben Achisamach? I want to today, this year, explore two perspectives, two mahalchim. The first comes from the Beis Halevi. The Beis Halevi, you know, is a sefer on Chumash that was authored by Rabbi Yoshe Ber Soloveitchik, Rabbi Yosef Doiv Halevi Soloveitchik, Zecherno Levracha, who was a Rosh Yeshiva in Valozhin, the Rav of the city of Slutsk, and then finally the Rav of Brisk in Lithuania, passed away in the year Tofresh Nun Beis, 1892. And he's often described as Harishon L'Shoshelus Brisk, the father of the Brisk dynasty. He was, of course, the father of Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, Reb Chaim Brisker, who's called Brisker because of his father who assumed the position of Rabbanus in Brisk. And he wrote a sefer called Beis Halevi. He himself was a Levi, the Soloveitchik's a Levian. And in Beis Halevi, in Parshas Kisisa, he addresses this Kasher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe. He doesn't quote the Yerushalmi or connect it to prayer, but he explores a fascinating insight. The insight is very similar to another insight that's also brought in Meshech Chachma, in Parshas Kisisa, the commentary on Chumash that was written by the Ur Sameach, Reb Meir Simcha HaKoyim of Dvinsk, the Rav of Dvinsk, who wrote his commentary Ur Sameach on the Rambam, Meshech Chachma on Chumash, and passed away in the 1920s. And the Meshech Chachma says also a very similar idea in Parshas Kisisa. What the Beis Halevi points out is that all the commentators struggle why and how the Jews created the golden calf. How is it that a people could fall from such a spiritual peak into such an abyss? What happened? How did this transformation happen literally within a few hours? Moshe is not coming down from the mountain and all breaks loose. What exactly transpired? So of course this is a theme. It's a worthy theme of many shiurim, and it's been explored by commentators throughout the generations, each person from his own, from each mefoidish, each commentator from his own perspective. The Beis Halevi explains it thus. He says that the Jewish people were looking not to replace God, but they were looking for a representation of Hashem. The way the Meshech Chachma puts it was that it was very difficult for them to fathom the idea of an intangible God completely. It was unheard of in society, and even though these are Jews, monotheists, children of Avraham Avinu, but nonetheless the concept was still so remote, so abstract. They needed some tangible manifestation that they can attribute to God, some way in which God could become real within the physical imagination of the human being. And that's how they understood the concept of the Mishkan. What is the Mishkan? Hashem says to Moshe, build for me an ark. On top of the ark you'll have a golden lid. On top of the golden lid you're going to hammer out two winged golden children, a male and a female, gazing at each other. And from between those two golden cherubs I will speak to you. Really? So what is that? That's not similar to an Egel Hazav. What is that exactly? You have a golden boy, you have a golden girl, two creatures. Okay, they're not calves, they're humans. They're fine. And God reveals himself through those to Reuven. If you don't build a Reuven, I'm not going to reveal myself. So this is even a proof from later when the Mishkan is built. And it's gold, it's pure gold. So what they were looking for was not obliterating God or replacing God with a pagan deity. What they were looking was for a representation of God, a physical manifestation of God. And the Meshech Chachma elaborates at length, the Beis Halevi elaborates at length, and he says that if somebody, it's very interesting, Beis Halevi, he says, if somebody understands the secrets of the universe, and understands the secrets of the spiritual worlds, and understands the unique synchronization and relationship between the spiritual and the physical, they can actually know how to create and form a physical object that can be a channel for spiritual divine energy. And that is why the Mishkan, the sanctuary, is not just a super rational decree. Every item in the Mishkan was designed with specific materials, in a specific size, in a particular fashion. Why? Why is the Aron this size? Why is this baget from this material? Why is the Shulchan made up of these items? What is it? Just Amchapt. I mean, if you read Truma Tetzava Vayakov Kuda, you see the incredible focus on detail to the point that it's quite perplexing. Does it really matter if it's 2.5 Amos or 3 Amos? But if the Aron was 3 Amos, it was not an Aron. And does it matter if it's acacia wood plated with gold, or it's completely gold? And do I really have to know exactly what the peg looked like? And the socket under the beam? And exactly how it matched on the top? And the drapings and the curtains? And how many layers of curtains? And one is 5 and 5 and 6 and 5? And exactly the hooks? And what material the hooks are made up of? Mainly when you're making a bar mitzvah, I understand. If not that, if without that, there's no chalois bar mitzvah. I got that. And if there's one mistake, if there's one error, the whole simcha can be destroyed for generations. Especially if it shows up in the picture. But that's a bar mitzvah. But the Mishkan, you know, they say a maisa, that a Jew bought this very expensive silk from Italy, and he gave it to a tailor to weave for him the most elegant suit in the world. So he made up with him, it's going to be ready in 3 weeks. He comes in 3 weeks, and Kolvi Enoin, it's not ready. He says, I need another 6 months. 6 months, he says, yeah, for my work, I need 6 months. After 6 months, it's not ready. Another week, he'll be ready. Fine, he comes, it's ready, he puts on the suit. Frustrated, he turns to the tailor, and he says, I don't understand. You know, even the world, the whole universe, didn't take God more than 6 days. This was 7 months. Taylor looks at him and says, how could you compare the two? What, are you going to compare the universe to my suit? So, how am I going to compare the Mishkan to Bar Mitzvah? But the details are incredibly nuanced. So the Kabbalists and the Jewish philosophers, the Ramah, Rabbeinu Moshe Isserlish has a sefer called Torah Sa'ila. So it's a big volume, a thick volume. And he goes through all of the details of the Mishkan, explaining what they represent symbolically and spiritually. Every single nuance in the Mishkan. And this is what the Beis Halevi says. And there are other Sfarim similar to what the Ramah does in Torah Sa'ila. So what the Beis Halevi says is that if somebody would know and understand the secrets of the cosmos, and the unique energy contained in every single nuance of our world, they theoretically can construct a Mishkan on their own, because they understand what everything represents and what it could accomplish and what it could achieve. So he says, now, Moshe, who was the spokesman for Hashem, the prophet of God is gone, who's going to communicate to them Hashem's will? Who's going to communicate to them the Shekhinah? Moshe is not here anymore. So let's create a space, where the Shekhinah is going to be revealed. Let's create a Mishkan where God's presence is going to be communicated. Let's create a substitute for Moshe, for Moshe Rabbeinu. And I would add, and I guess there's an advantage in a golden calf, because that doesn't die, that can't perish, in fact that can't sin, and that's what happens in the Mishkan. That's exactly what Hashem does in the Mishkan. He creates a home, a physical structure, which houses his presence. However you explain what that means. What does it mean that houses his presence? Why is God there more than anywhere else? And somehow he speaks through that place. That's what they wanted before the Mishkan was created. That's why they created, they wanted to create this. This is what they're looking for. He says, but the problem is, they knew that you need a very wise person for this, who knows the secrets of the universe. So who do they go to? They go to Aaron HaKoyen. He says, "Who yada imek advarim b'soyde seyem yosem mikulam." He knew the depths and the secrets of reality more than all of the Jews. And they say, "Kum asay lanu elakim." They want a place for hashras hashlima. And he says, therefore, the idea, the plan of the Jews was latoiva. It was positive. It was good. They wanted the Shechina to dwell among them in a manifest way. It's a little different than the Ur Sameach. The Meshech Chachma speaks more about they needed a physical representation of God. And he says they wanted a Mishkan. They wanted a Moshe Rabbeinu, but not as a person, as inanimate matter. Says the Beis Halevi, they made a mistake. Why is it a mistake? Hashem said to build a Mishkan. Why are the Kruvim so much better than the Egel Hazav? Why? Why is the Kapoyer so much superior to a calf? Why? Why is... isn't it exactly the same? It's even the same material. It's gold. Pure gold. Zok the Beis Halevi. It's true. It's true. Our actions in this world and different facts, realities of this world have an effect on all of the worlds. Amnam kol, I'm going to quote a few words from it. Amnam kol zorakim oisa amaisa tzivsola vatoyer lasos. But there's one condition that they forgot. And that is, Hashem never told them to do it. The Mishkan Hashem said to do it. Hashem said, build this for me. Now when you build it in all of the details, so now the Mishkan becomes a place where the Shekhinah is manifested. But if a person creates a Maisa on his own, as Oisei Maisa Einoi Moyel Klum, the HaMaisa Mitadatzmei Lo Yifol Bazeshi Yishur Shekhinah Sehalei. No action in the world, even if it's extremely wise and sophisticated and deep and profound, has the power to actually create the revelation of God and Ashras HaShekhinah through it. Because how can the finite imagination or the finite fixed reality house that which is transcendent, that which is infinite? So he says, Ikira tikunim u masha oyser itzayim boire, u balava chi einem rak tachbulis anushi, u chola ischakmus lo yilu mu'uma ki mi yoyma lo yimatifo. All of the wise ideas and strategies of the person will not be effective, because the ultimate, what ultimately matters is that God chooses it as the place of his Shechina. Hashem says, do this and I will dwell here. I can decide, I can imagine, I can fancy all of these imaginations that this is the vehicle for the Shechina. But there's only one who can decide where he's going to dwell and where he's not going to dwell. And I'm not the master of that. I cannot manipulate that, even with the best intentions. And that is where the Ribbono Shel Olam says, this is going to be my place. I'm telling you that this is going to be my place. Because by definition, to bridge the gulf between the finite and the infinite can't happen through the finite. How can the finite touch the infinite? By definition, the finite cannot describe the infinite or control it or manipulate it. Only the infinite can choose to bridge the gulf through the methods that the infinite one that Hashem chooses. That's why the Beis Halevi says when Moshe asks compassion for the Jewish people, he uses the words Ure'ei ki amcha hagoy hazeh. You should realize that this is your nation, this is your people. What he means, Hashem didn't know it's his people. What he means is, he says, Chetam loy hoya machmas shirotzu losur mavaydoscha chalila. Adirabe, ikir adover hoya lesibas shukasum shiyir kirvasach lahem. It's not that they wanted to do something to distance themselves from you. Their entire objective was to come closer to you. In the very sin, you can see their closeness. How could you not forgive them? All they're trying is to have a relationship with you. So you're going to destroy them for the fact that they wanted to have a relationship with you? Ureiki amcha goyazet. This is your people, it's your nation. Says the Beis Halevi, now you'll understand the 18, 19 times in Parshas Pekudei. Every pasuk almost. Not every pasuk, every item. Give me a break! Say it once, but Tzalo did everything that Hashem said. No! Everything. It's the shulchan. It's not because everything. What? Zok the Beis Halevi. You have it in your source. First source. Kivon the ikir chetem beegel o yamashiratzu lischakim me'atzman. Lasas al pi diyosam v'chachmosam ma'isa shaloi netztavu olav. Since the main sin of the calf was not the idea that Hashem can dwell in a golden calf. If he can dwell in Kruvim, he can dwell in a golden calf. That's not the sin. We all daven in a shul. Why do you go to shul to daven? We say Eretz Yisrael is a holy place. Yerushalayim is a holy place. The Beis HaMikdash was the epicenter of holiness. Why? What was it? A building. A mountain. That's not the problem, the Beis HaLevi says. The problem was me'atzmon. They decided based on their imagination. They decided based on their imagination something that will be the place where God will be, communicate, reveal himself, manifest himself. So that's why by every single item, again and again, it says, don't think he just made the tzitz, he made the yarin, he made the ksoinus, he made the mitznevus, he made the shulchan, the mizbeach, the plim, the mizbeach, hachitzen, every single item. In other words, constantly repeating what's the ultimate significance and value of creating this item in all of its nuances. One thing, kashetziva, Hashem is Moshe, like Hashem commanded Moshe. There's a person sitting here in this room now whom I met many, many years ago. This was in Boston. I was learning in a yeshiva there in Brookline in the mid-90s. I was at a parade in a park, a Jewish parade in a park, and this young man was walking by. And I asked him if he would like to put on tefillin. He was a completely secular Jew, to my recollection. He'd like to put on tefillin. Shockingly, he agreed. It's always shocking to me when somebody agrees, because it's like, well, Would I stop to put on tefillin? But he did. He did enthusiastically, emotionally. He told me about tefillin, I think, of his grandfather that sits somewhere in a closet. I don't remember if it was the first time he put on tefillin or it wasn't the first time he put on tefillin. But it was a very special moment. And from that began a journey to the point that today he's a Jew, fully entrenched in Torah and mitzvahs, created a beautiful family, and lives here, and is here today at the shir. I still recall a conversation we had. He asked me, right away, he said, why do you really think that tefillin is the way to connect to God? Fine, it's the Jewish way of taking your blood pressure, that we all know. But why do you really think? Don't you think meditation, transcendental meditation or similar, that's how you connect to God in a much more real way? You wrap some straps around your arm, around your head, you connect it. The primary element is consciousness. Meditate. If most of us can meditate for a few hours and cleanse our minds from anything else, you could connect with a higher energy. Just by putting on two black boxes on your head and on your arm, how are you going to connect? Now, the point of meditation and its value is well taken. To cleanse your mind, to focus your mind. What the Poskim call his Hisboinenus, the Shulchan Aruch brings in Hilchas Tefillah, the Ramah says, the Kaidim HaTefillah, Yashir, the Reinemus HaKel, the Shiflus HaAdam. A person has to focus their mind and develop a consciousness of divinity is quite important. But his question was, what the Tefillin? Even if you're going to tell me that the focus of the tefillin is as a mechanism, as a physical symbolism for the meditation. In other words, the main idea is the consciousness. But you do something physical so that the consciousness should have a tangible manifestation of the person's life. Fine. But you're telling me that the main focus is the tefillin. And I remember we spoke then, and the point communicated then was this point. And that is, if God is a reality that's created in my own image, so then I can decide and feel how to create a relationship. Certain emotions, certain ideas. But if God, by definition, is undefined and infinite, I was created in His image. He wasn't created in my image. So there's no thought and there's no meditation as powerful, as important, as powerful, as transcendent that it is, and as high as it can take you. But you can climb and climb and climb. You could make it to the top of Mount Everest. But can you really make it? Can you really make it to the infinite? How? Do we have the tools? They say Maisa the Sfasemis, the Valdika Maisa. Sfasemis was a grandson of the Chiddush Yerim. Chiddush Yerim was the first Gerei Rebbe. Chiddush Yerim passed away in 1921. Rabbi Shemeir of Ger, he was a student of the Kotzker. When the Kotzker Rebbe passed away, so the Chiddush Yerim moved to Ger, which is not far from Warsaw, and he established what became known as Ger Chassidus. The city is called Gur. Rabbi Shemeir. Chiddush Yerim had 13 children. It's very hard to say. All of his children died during his lifetime. I think besides one daughter, maybe two. He had a son who also passed away. People don't realize that some people suffered. And his einikel, he raised. His grandson, he raised. His name was Rabbi Yehuda Arya Leib. When his grandfather passed away, there was no son to take over. So the Sfasemes took over the leadership of Ger, and he led it for many decades till his own passing on Heishvat Tofresh Samachay. Heishvat 1905. Sfasemes. And then he was succeeded by his son, the Imre Emes, who already passed away in Eretz Yisrael in 1948, and he was succeeded by his son, the Beis Yisrael, etc., who was succeeded by his brother, and then his nephew. Okay? Fine. You're going to be tested on all of this. Now, Sfasemes was very young when he became the Gerei Rebbe. Chiddush Yerim was from the Gedolei Hador. So you can understand that for older Hasidim it was difficult. Sfasemes was, I think, 21 years old when he became the Rebbe of Ger. 21 years old. We call it today a baby. The truth is then 21 was not a baby because, you know, longevity, lifespan was much shorter. So at 21 you really had to have your life figured out. Because today it becomes a kratzen. You know, till you're 90 you're still trying to figure out if you're going to become a doctor or a lawyer, or an accountant, or you're going to go to college. But at that stage in history, you had to figure out who you want to be quite young, you know, so there were already 9-year-olds who were quite mature. They didn't have the luxury of procrastinating a lifetime. So the Sfasemes was very young, but for older Hasidim, it was difficult, emotionally difficult to connect. So they say a Maisa, but the Sfasemes called in a group of the elder Hasidim, and he understood how difficult it is for them to become, you know, to remain part of this Hasidus, to be connected to him as their Rebbe. And he said, I want to tell you all my story. There was once a very tall mountain, and everybody tried to climb the mountain. To no avail. People tried climbing, they fell, they died, they got stuck. It was horrible. One gibber, one mighty fellow said, I'm going to do it. And he prepares himself with the proper gear, with the proper exercise, the proper methods, and he begins the climb. And lo and behold, after a few months, he makes it to the top of the mountain. He achieves the impossible. And when he reaches the peak of the mountain, how utterly shocked he is to find that there's somebody on top of the mountain. And that somebody wasn't a person who could compete with him on a muscular, athletic level. This somebody was a little child. A little, young, frail child. And this man is dismayed. He's horrified. All of this avoid, all of this work, and this child is up there. And he looks at him and he says, Ingale, child, little baby, how did you get it? How did you get it? And he says, Ich bin geboren geworden auf dem Berg. You climbed the mountain. I was born on top of this mountain. This is what the Svasemas told the Chassid. The child did not delegitimize the efforts of the climber and the fact that he didn't put in those efforts. He just clarified the fact that sometimes some people are born on top of the mountain. Meditation can reach very high, but it can reach as high as I can climb. Torah and mitzvahs is on, you were born on top of the mountain. God says here, this mitzvah is from the word safsa. Through this you can connect. This is the way in which you will have a relationship with me. I am in the tefillin. I am in the mishkan. So the Beis Halevi says, that's why 18 times Kasher Tziva Hashem is Moshe, Kasher Tziva Hashem is Moshe. And the Meshech Chachma goes as far as saying something very intense. Meshech Chachma says that's why Moshe had to smash and break the tablets. Why break the luchas? You don't feel the Jews are deserving of the luchas? Give them back to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Put them in a safe. Hide them in your tent. Place them on the mountain. Why break them? Why destroy them? And the Meshech Chachma says this wasn't anger, just anger. It wasn't because Moshe Kevayachol Chas V'Shalom lost himself. It wasn't because Moshe was so overwhelmed with rage, smashes it. This was an essential part of helping the Jewish people, because the luchas were the great representation of God. And Moshe breaks the luchas and he says, "There's nothing valuable in this world. There's nothing that tangible that we could say, ah, this is where God is. Only Hashem. Only Hashem, who's completely intangible and completely undefined, can decide that." And because he saw that they're still seeking to give God a tangible manifestation, he broke any tangible manifestation of it. It's a little bit of a different mahalach, but it's very similar to the Beis Halevi, although it's a little bit of a different guy. Okay, this is the mahalach of the Beis Halevi. Explains the 18 times or the 9 times Kasher Tziva Hashem is Moshe. Now let's go to the next step. What does the Yerushalmi mean that it's connected to davening? 18 Shmoneh Esrus, but the first one you can't count, so it's not 19, it's 18. So now we have to address really the bigger question, which is really, essentially should have been the opening question, and that is, the whole Vayakal Pekudei seems completely superfluous. Because you already have Truma and Tetzaveh. In Truma and Tetzaveh, the Ribbono Shel Olam told Moshe everything there is to know about the Mishnah. All the details, all of the nuances, all the Torah had to do was open up Parshas Vayakal, Moshe gathered the Jews. He said, this is what Hashem said. Moshe told them everything that Hashem said in Truma Tetzaveh. And then the Pasuk could have summarized two parshas in one verse. Ubnei Yisrael, Asu Kechoel, Ashetziv, Hashem is Moshe. Bnei Yisrael did everything Hashem told Moshe. The Mishkan was built. The Shechina came into the Mishkan and all was good. We know that many halachas are derived from an extra word, from an extra letter. We know how Chazal attributed how Chazal saw the precision in every letter of Torah, so that the 79,000 words, or the more than 300,000 letters, each one of them is meticulous. When it comes to the story of Eliezer in Parshas Chayisara, Chazal wonder, why is there a repetition? Rashi even brings it down. What about here? The whole Vayakal Pekudei is superfluous. Hundreds of verses, unnecessary. Completely excessive. Completely superfluous at first glance. You already said everything. And we see it most in Rashi. Rashi, in the beginning of Vayakal Pekudei, what does he say? He says, I already explained everything in Truma and Tetzaveh. Go there, and you'll find out what everything means. And that's why Vayakra Pekudei has long pages of Chumash and no Rashi. Why? Because it's just a repetition, so Rashi doesn't have to repeat what the Eifid is, and what the Choshen is, and what the Shashiris are, and what the Shulchan looked like, and what the Menorah looked like. Go back to Truma Tetzaveh. If Rashi can do it, Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't do it, and yet the whole Vayakra Pekudei is repeated. Why? So the Ramban already raises this question. And the Ramban says, your second source, Ala klal kol zeh derechiba v'derech mayla. The Ramban says, all of this is to demonstrate love and greatness. Loimar ki chofetz Hashem b'melacha, u'maskir oisa b'teirosei pa'omnim rabbis laharbis schar lo'iskim bo. It demonstrates the fact that Hashem desires the work, and He mentions it in the Torah many times. You know, when you're in love with something, you keep on mentioning it. And also to increase the reward for those involved. This is like what the Medrash says, that the story, the conversations of the servants of the patriarchs is superior to Hashem, it's more beautiful to Hashem than the Torah of the children, because many gufei Torah, le'nitnu ala b'rimizah, we don't even have the 39 types of labor forbidden on Shabbos clearly in the Torah. We don't even have that explicit. One of the most basic ideas of halacha every single week, what you're not allowed to do on Shabbos, doesn't say anywhere in Chumash besides a few things. Don't plow, don't harvest, don't light a fire. And yet, the Parsha of Eliezer is 2-3 pages in the Sefer Torah. The answer is, there is a love, there is a beauty there, there is something that He cherishes about the servants of the Avos. So the Ramban says that Hashem is so in love with the Mishkan and the work of the Mishkan and the creation of the Mishkan and the people making the Mishkan, so to speak, if we would say it in English about a person, we would say he can't control himself. He speaks about it again and again and again. And the Ramban goes through the fact over there, this Ramban, that actually the Mishkan is enumerated 5 times. Not twice, but 5 times. Because first Hashem tells it. Hashem tells it to Moshe. And then everything is summed up. Everything is summed up. And then Hashem says it over, and then it's summed up, and then they do it, and it's summed up. He says 5 times. Why? Simply tremendous affection. So it's a very emotional Ramban. It's a very moving Ramban. Hashem is in love with the Mishkan. Kenzach Nishtayin out. He says it again and again and again. You know, we go through by Yaakov Kodesh, it's like, okay, here we go again. The Krushim and the Brichim and the Amudim and the Donim and the Adonim. It's like, unless if you're an architect, Mela. If you're not an architect. But the Ramban is saying that there's a tremendous affection, a tremendous energy, and therefore there's repetition. That's the Ramban. The Chidush HaGris, Reb Velvel Lebrisker, who was a grandson of the Beis Halevi, I mentioned the Beis Halevi. Beis Halevi's son, one of his sons was Reb Chaim Brisker. And Reb Chaim had a son, Reb Velvel, Reb Yitzchok Ze'ev Halevi Soloveitchik, who succeeded his father. His father, Reb Chaim, passed away in 1918 in Av. And the Brisker Rav, Reb Velvel, succeeded his father as the Rav of Brisk until the war. And he managed to flee with some of his children to Yerushalayim, where he passed away Erev Yom Kippur Tovshin Chaf by Kol Nidri, 1959. And he's known Ad HaYom Hazeh as the Brisker Rav, or Reb Velvel Brisker. And one of his svarim he has, actually in the back of Beis Halevi, Chidushei HaGris Al HaTorah, some short notes and commentary on Torah. The Brisker Rav, Reb Velvel, asks this question, and I'm going to quote his words. It's very, very brief, and it's not so easy to understand. He says, Kol Parshas Vayakel Matmiya. The whole Vayakel, and he means Pkudei, also, is strange. The Lama Yatzorich Lazu Al Kol HaMaisim Oidapam. Why repeat everything again and again? Halei Nizbaru Kvar. It already all was explained. V'hoyo Loimar Da'asu Kasher Nitztava. All you needed to do was say 3 words. They did as they were commanded. Chasal Siddha Pesach, Chazak Chazak Viniz Chazek, and Kriya Satoid of this Shabbos would have been 1.5 minutes rather than 49 minutes, and then you have to nachir the sermon. And by Yaakov Kudei, the rabbi thinks he has to give a double sermon. This is the Brisker Rav's question. His answer is this. Take a look in your sources. Based on a Gemara Chayrus daf Yud Zayin Amid Beis. Zok the Gemara. The Mishnah of Chayrus daf Yud Zayin speaks about a ewe, a sheep, a female sheep, who gives birth to two males simultaneously. The heads come out simultaneously. Which one has the status of a pchor? A pchor, the first male born of a sheep, right? We learned yesterday in Parshas Kisisa, has a kedusha, it has to be given to the kohen. But now, two of them were born simultaneously. So Rabbi Yossi says, they're both a pchor, they're both. Chachamim say, Eif shalat samtsam, come on. Come on, it's impossible that they both came out at the same time. One came out first. It looked like they came out at the same time. But there's no way they both came out. There was maybe a millisecond of a difference. And therefore, only one of them is a Chayr. The Mishnah discusses that at length. How you work it out. Which one? Because you don't know which one came out first. It looks like they came out together. So the Gemara says this. The rabbis hold, B'day Shemayim Eif Shalat Samson, B'day Adamai. When something happens naturally from heaven, then it's impossible to know exactly with precision which one came out first. But what about a person? If you put your mind to something, can you do something with exact precision? As the Gemara is going to explain. Tashma, chut shel sikri choygri be'em tzal havdol bin dam malyonim bin dam machachtoinim. In the Mizbeach, there were offerings that when you sprinkle the blood on the wall of the altar, it had to be on the higher half. There were other bloods, other offerings, the blood had to be on the lower half. So they had a chut shel sikri. They had a string in the middle that separated the higher from the lower, and therefore you knew. And if you believe that a person can do it exactly midway, exactly halfway, so then what's going to happen? It's not exactly. So sometimes blood that has to be in the higher half is going to be in the lower half, or blood in the lower half is going to be in the higher half, because a person can't be exact, can't be mitzamtzim. So the Gemara says, come on. The marvich bapurta. You don't have to put it. Nobody says that the string has to be mamish in the center. We don't know what the center is. You're always going to be a drop off. But the point is, don't do the blood right here. Right? Give it some space. You put it to Eric, and then you put the blood higher or lower. You don't put it right there. So it's not going to be a mistake because you put it in other words, this is just a symbol. But it doesn't mean that you mamish have to be mecham. So the Gemara, Toshma, Mimidas Kalim, Mimidas Mizbeach. Ribbono Shel Olam says, I need you to make the Kalim. Everything has its precise Mida. The Arin is Amasayim Vachetzi Arka. 2.5 Amas the length. Amma Vachetzi Rachbad. Amma Vachetzi Kamasa. All the Kalim. Midas Mizbeach. The Mizbeach. Shloish Amas Kamasa. What do you mean a person can't be Mitzamtim? It has to be exactly 3 amas. An amma is approximately what? 1.5 feet, give or take. So it has to be exactly 3 amas. So the Gemara says, no, shiny hasam, it's different. The Rachmana Amar of it. The Torah says, do, build. Ubechol heicha de matzis lemevet nichale. The Torah says, I want the orange should be 2.5 amas the length. That's what I want. Right? But recognizing human reality, recognizing the human condition, the Torah is saying, however you can do it, nichale, it's fine. This is what the Gemara says. So therefore, there's no proof from the building of the Mishkan that a person, and halacha efshel etzamtzim, that we trust that a person's precision could be impeccable and flawless. Maybe not, and it won't be a Messiah b'chetzi arka. Says the Brisker Rav, that's why Vayakal Pkudi had to be repeated. Because if Vayakal Pkudi wouldn't be repeated, he says, Chazina, we see. The Bitsivoy Loi Nemar de Ma'akal Bechaldu. Shalayachal Tamsa. We see that in the commandment, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam didn't mean that even a Mashu is Ma'akal. That if it's not exactly that size, exactly, it won't be kosher. Why? Because the Gemara is assuming that a person can't be that precise. So Hashem never meant it that way. Hashem l'chadchila set aside, and what he meant was, as approximate as you can get, as accurate as you can get. Don't dramatically differ from it. But in that ballpark, even if it will not be precise, mamish to the last detail. That's what we see clearly from this Gemara. Val zem mefarish beparshas Vayakal kol prat prat. So that's why Vayak repeats every single prat and all of the sizes. Loimar the asu b'diyuk b'chol mashu k'moshenemar lehem lasas haya etzlom she'asuke. So Yaakov Kudei says, don't think that they weren't precise, but they actually did it exactly as he said. Even though we see from the Gemara that it's not Likuva, because E.F. Shalitzamtsim. So Yaakov Kudei says, look, they did it exactly this size, and every single item it repeats and tells you that they followed the dimensions and the detailed, meticulous instructions and nuanced details of what they were instructed, to tell you that they actually followed exactly the midah of what it was. Now, the Brisker Rav is not making clear. Does it mean that somehow they had a special bracha, that they could be mitzamtzim, even though we say EF shel mitzamtzim, right? Or it means that they didn't rely on the saying, it's not really a kubah, so what do we have to be medayik? They were very, very medayik. I think he means that the Torah wants to say that it actually came out exactly as the Ribbono shel Olam wanted it. Don't think that they said le'erech, it was exactly that detail, which is probably very reflective of the Brisker Derech and Brisker Mahalach about the focus on details and pratim, especially in the world of halacha. But I want to take this and now go to the next step and take it really from the bridge of the world of Nigla or Halacha to the world of Nister and the world of Chassidus. The Yerushalmi called the Mishkan of Yaakov and Kudei Mishkan Sheni. What's Mishkan Rishon? Truma Tetzav. Let's now understand the theme that really unfolds here. The two Mishkans are not the same. They're completely not the same. You're looking at me, of course they're the same, they're identical. No. On one level, they're completely identical. And on another level, they are as different as can be. And I'll tell you why. The Mishkan of Truma Tetzava, what is that Mishkan? It's a Mishkan built of the Ribbono Shel Olam's words. Moshe is on a mountain, and Hashem says, V'yikhu li truma, v'asu li mikdash, v'shachanti v'soich. I need you to make for me a Beis HaMikdash, and I will dwell there. And now I'm going to tell you what to do. V'asu aroin, v'asisa this, v'asisa that, and he goes through the whole Mishkan. What is the Mishkan of Truma Tetzava? What is the stuff? What is the material of the Mishkan of Truma Tetzava? What's the answer? What is it made of? The Mishkan of Truma Tetzava. The Ribbono Shel Olam's words. It's a Mishkan built from God's imagination, from God's words. To who? To Moshe. Where? On a mountain. It's a spiritual Mishkan. It's a heavenly Mishkan. Of course, he speaks about physical materials. He speaks about a tangible structure. He speaks about concrete items. But at this stage, it's words. It's communication. It's pure godly energy. It's a Mishkan built of what? Of the Ribbono Shel Olam's Machshava, the Ribbono Shel Olam's Dibur, communicated to Moshe on top of the mountain. That's the Mishkan of Truma Tetzav. What's the Mishkan of Yaakov Kudei? What is it built of? It's built of copper and gold and silver and turquoise wool and purple wool and scarlet wool. It's built of this gem and that gem. It's built of this spice and that spice. It's built with this spice and that. It's this spice and that spice is used. All the things he goes through. It's built from acacia wood. And drapings or coverings that come from goats, from rams, from tachash, etc. It's built from very physical materials. And who builds it? The Jewish people build it. And where do they build it? They build it on earth, in a desert, not on a mountain, not in heaven, using physical material here. This is where they build it. So although it's a repetition of the Mishkan, of Truma Tetzava, true, but the very identity of the Mishkan is a different Mishkan. This is a heavenly Mishkan. This is an earthly Mishkan. This is a Mishkan built on a mountain. This is a Mishkan built on sand in the desert. This is a Mishkan built from words, and this is a Mishkan built from concrete materials. So we're dealing with a whole different Mishkan. True, the second Mishkan resembles the model, the vision, the blueprint, the manual of the first Mishkan, but its essence, its mitzias, its chayder, its stuff, is a completely different creature. The first is built by an infinite and absolute God. The Ribbono Shel Olam speaks what type of candelabra he wants to have, what type of beams he wants to have in his words. The other one is built by mortals of flesh and blood. One is constructed of nebulous spirit, of nebulous energy, of words. The other one is constructed of gross matter. One is designed in heaven, the other one is designed on earth. What's the significance of this? The significance of this is that these two Mishkans, I would say, represent two dimensions of everybody's life. What are the two dimensions? We don't build one Mishkan. We have two Mishkans. There's the Mishkan of words, and there's the Mishkan of reality. There's the Mishkan of the vision, and there's the Mishkan you actually create and implement in the physical world. There's the Mishkan that you plan and you construct in your mind or on paper, and this is a Mishkan made up of your own imagination, and then there's the actual Mishkan, the way it comes out. And let me give an example outside of the world of the Mishkan. Take people's marriages, for example. Okay? Nobody experiences one marriage. Everybody has two marriages. Even if you're married to your spouse, La'arichus yamim v'shanim tovus, happily ever after, abinyan adayad, there's still two marriages. There's the marriage on top of the mountain, and there's the marriage of the reality. There's marriage the way you envision it in your mind, the way you plan it, the way you imagine it in heaven. That's one marriage. There's the way you play house in your mind. Remember when you were young, what your home is going to look like, what your family is going to look like, what your relationship is going to look like. And there it's always perfect. Because it's thoughts, it's words, it's imaginations. Why not? It's a kazgel. But then there's another marriage. Then there's the marriage of reality. There's the day-to-day real marriage in which you're not planning how to be loving, how to be affectionate, how to be connected, how to build a beautiful... You actually have to build a home with everything that a home involves, from paying a mortgage, always the most exciting part of a home, to taking out the garbage, to shopping, to cleaning, to dealing with disputes and arguments and all the headaches that come with a physical home. When you buy a home in your imagination, you remember when you were planning your home, it's always a perfect home, but now you actually have to deal with the home. Those of you who are zeichet to build homes in Muncie, or wherever you build homes, you always know there's the home that you build in your imagination, and then there's dealing with the contractor. One is blissful messianic, and the other one is... And the other one, if you stay alive, half sane and somewhat happy after, is a grace of brother. Why? Because suddenly every contractor decides that the pipe has to come out. You know, mamish, where you're planning to sit at the Shabbos table. Go argue with him. That wasn't part of your imagination. That's part of reality. Every career is that way. I plan a career. I plan a website, I plan a company, an organization, a movement, a shul, a yeshiva, a business. On paper, gewaldig, perfect, impeccable. But now suddenly there's the reality, now there's overhead, now there's dealing with headaches, now there's dealing with customers. Children! There are the children you imagine, the way you imagine your children will be, your children will grow up. And then there's the reality of your children. Dealing with their personalities, dealing with their characters. Every area of life has a Mishkan Lamaila and a Mishkan Lamaka. There's the dream Mishkan, built of thoughts, words, spirit, strategy, imagination, energy. And always, in potential, not in actuality. In Bekoyach, not in Bekoyach. And then there's the Mishkan Lamata. So let me walk into your house, let me see. this is not done. This is not done. This is a problem. Let me see. What does the marriage look like? A woman once came to me and she said that when she was getting married, she decided in her mind that her home is going to be very different than the home she grew up in. I said, what would the difference be? Said her home was very chaotic. It was mom's always chaos. So she decided in her home, these were her words, there's going to be Bach playing in the background 24 hours a day. She's going to have in the kitchen speakers classical music. You walk into the house and you're going to feel Gan Eden. You're going to feel serenity and tranquility. And then she told me she decided that twice a week she's going to go with her husband, take a walk on the boardwalk, twice a week, and watch the sunset. And thus, life is going to be so much more peaceful. So I said, Nu, how long are you married? She says, 25 years. I said, so how is Bach doing in your home? So she says, it's too chaotic to be able to hear the music. And I said, how did the boardwalk work out? She said, it happened once. It happened once in 2.5 decades. The Mishkan Lamaila is always perfect. The Mishkan Lamaka is always flawed. Not because we're bad, but because that's the nature of the beast. You're dealing, to build a house in Machshava, what does it cost? I don't need $1 million to build a house in Machshava. I don't have to deal not with architects, not with contractors, not with electricians, not with plumbers, and not with banks. I deal with my own brain. I deal with my own brain waves, with my own imagination. Dream on. The Mishkan Lamata of reality. Now you need the concrete. Now you need the concrete reality. It's a whole different reality. Now, let's come back here to the Mishkan. So there's two Mishkans. There's the Mishkan Lamaila, there's the Mishkan Lamata. And now the question is, in which Mishkan does the Ribbono Shel Olam dwell? Which Mishkan is the Mishkan where the Shechina says, "Kvod Hashem Molei Et HaMishkan"? The glory of God fills the Mishkan. Which Mishkan? The Mishkan Lamata, the physical Mishkan, the flawed Mishkan, the Mishkan that's built by humans of flesh and blood with physical, coarse, limited material in a sandy desert. That's the Mishkan where the Shechina is built. This comes into it. That's why there's repetition. If the Torah would say, Vayakal Pekudei would consist of one pasuk, Ubnei Yisrael Asuk Echol Echetiv Hashem Es Moshe. Jews did everything that Hashem Moshe commanded. What would you understand? The value of the lower Mishkan is what? In as much as it reflects the higher Mishkan. In other words, of course the higher Mishkan is where it's at. That's the real Mishkan. The Mishkan that Hashem planned, that Hashem spoke, that Hashem created out of His own words in heaven. That's the Mishkan. But we're not in heaven, we're on earth. So Hashem says, build a Mishkan. And they did what Moshe told them to do. And as much as it reflects the higher Mishkan, and it does in many ways, even if it's not perfect, the Shechina comes in there. Why? Because it reflects the higher Mishkan. Comes the Torah and says, no! You need to understand the fundamental revolutionary idea of Judaism. And that is the value of the Mishkan Lamata is not that it reflects the Mishkan Lamaila. The value of the Mishkan Lamata is that it's made up of Mata. It's the limitedness. It's the finiteness. It's the mortality. It's the fragmentation. It's the lowliness. It's the confrontation with the fluctuations of the human condition and the brute, gross nature of physical matter that creates the Makom HaShechina. Why? Because the Medrash says in Tanchuma Nasi Nis'ava, Kadosh Baruch Hu Liyos Lo Dira B'Tachtoinim, He wanted to have a home in the physical world, in the lowest elements of reality. This is where the Shechina wants to be. Don't think that the Mishkan Lamata, its value is, the Jews did everything Hashem told Moshe, and as much as it reflects the true man, it's Ava Mishkan, it's a place where the Shechina dwells. Comes the Torah and says, no, we finished Truma Tetzaveh. Now we're going to do by Yaakov Kudeh. I'm going to repeat the whole story again. Because this is a new Mishkan. Of course, in words, it's the first Mishkan. It reflects the first Mishkan. But in reality, it's a new Mishkan. This is the Mishkan you're creating by people who have moods, who wake up on their left side, people who accuse Moshe of pocketing money. Medrash Rabbah says in Pekudei that they accused Moshe of pocketing money. You know that. Still happens. But imagine what happened with Moshe Rabbeinu. He was, why do you think he gave a cheshbon? Elif Pekudei HaMishkan. Why? Because they learned, who is the girl going in? Why is your daughter-in-law driving a new car? How did you make such an expensive bar mitzvah? Who paid for the Viennese table at the Chasana? I gave you a donation last week for the building fund. It went for the Chasana. Where did you get such a car? Right? That's what the Medrash says. They said, Moshe pocketed the money. So he said, Eilif Kudei HaMishkan. Here, let's go through. And he goes through every penny. And the Medrash says he forgot something. B'Yisrael Elef. He forgot what he did with some of the silver, and they said, ah. And then he remembered, he saw Vav, Asa, Vavim, La'amudim. He realized that this was a hook on the pillars to be able to hang the curtains. Moshe remembered. However, we understand Pshat in that Medrash. First of all, it shows you what Moshe had to go through, but it shows you this didn't happen on Har Sinai. Hashem didn't tell Moshe you're pocketing money. This happens in the Mishkan down here. It's a different Mishkan. It's a real, and we repeat it to say it's a self-contained Mishkan. And then the Torah says, and where does the Shekhinah dwell? It dwells in this Mishkan. In other words, don't always look at your life and compare it to the ideal heavenly life of your imagination. And live with the frustration of my children didn't come out the way I expected, and my marriage is not the way I imagined, and my career is not the way I imagined, and my house is not the way I imagined, and as much as I could make it close to my imagination, then it will be effective. Comes the Torah and says, no, of course you need a vision. Of course you need a blueprint. Of course you need a manual. Anarchy is not going to work, but I want you to know that the divine presence lives in the human, physical, mortal, fluctuated, challenging heart. And the divine presence lives in the soul of the person who struggles with addiction and with bad habits and with negative inclinations and with gross matter and all of the mental, spiritual, psychological challenges that people have. And the divine presence dwells in a home that is made up of human mortality by humans who are mortal, with the struggles of human mortality. In that reality, that's where you construct your Mishkan, and that's where the Shekhinah dwells. And now, let's see where this difference is contrasted clearly in the way the Torah puts it. So if you take a look in your sources, your third to the last source, the Torah says, "Betzalel ben Uri ben Chur lamata Yehuda, aseis kol asher tziva Hashem es Moshe." Betzalel did everything Hashem told Moshe, which is the first of the 19 times, Zok Rashi. This Rashi comes from Brachas, Daf Nun Hey Amud Aleph. Betzalel ben Uri aseis kol asher tziva Hashem es Moshe, asher tziva Moshe ein ksiv kan. It doesn't say Betzalel did what Moshe told him. It says Betzalel did what Hashem told Moshe. In other words, even things that Moshe did not tell him, he knew what Hashem told Moshe. And now she says, Moshe tzivul Betzalel lasas tchila kelim v'achakach mishkan. Amalei Betzalel minig oylem lasas tchila bayis v'achakach meisim kelim b'soicha. Moshe tells Betzalel, the first thing is, build all of the vessels, all of the pieces of furniture. Build the ark, build the table, build the candelabra, build the altar. And then he spoke to him about the exterior structure, the beams, the sackets, the curtains, the roof. If you're constructing a house, you first put in the couch. You first put in the dishwasher, you first put in the dining room table, or you first build a wall, you first build a structure. Who builds a house? First the furniture. Imagine you have an empty plot here, so you bring in couches, you bring in tables, you bring in paintings, only one problem, it's all outside. And then the first rain and snow comes, and it's all of Hashalom. First you build a bayis, an exterior structure, to house the kelim. What are you telling me to first build kelim? Oh my Lord. This is what I heard from Hashem. Amaloi Moshe. Betzel Kel Hayis. Betzalel. You have been in the shadow of God. Ki bevadei kach tzivele Yakadosh Baruch Hu. Bekein osa mishkan tchilevach kachasa hakel. You're right. You're in the shadow of Hashem. Betzalel. I want to ask you. It takes a rocket scientist to understand that first you put up walls and a roof and then you bring in the furniture. You don't put in an ark and a table and a candelabra and an altar if you don't have a structure. First build the Mishkan and then you'll put have where to put the Kelim. And why would Moshe distort this? What type of Yetzirah does one have to distort and say, you know what, first build Kelim and then a Mishkan? So in Truma and Tetzaveh, first are the Kelim. The first thing Moshe said, the first thing in Truma is build the Aron. Doesn't say to build the beams, that's later. First the Kelim. That's how Moshe tells Bezalel. Bezalel does it the other way. Bezalel builds first the Bayis and then the Kelim. You understand the difference? It's the difference between the Mishkan Lamaila and the Mishkan Lamata. Because in everything, every project in life, there's two components. There's the outer structure and there's the inner substance. For example, you want to create a business. You have a dream, what you want to accomplish, what you want to achieve. But that's the inner structure, the inner substance of it. But in order to get there, you need a structure. You need a place. You probably need a secretary. You need a register. You need investments. You need money. And we often get lost in that process. So you have your vision. What's the toichen? What's the substance? What's going to be in your house? But in order to have something in your house, you have to have a structure where it's going to be. A person wants to build a yeshiva. A person wants to change the world. Great. A person wants to build a gewaldic institution. Whatever you want to build. So you have your dream, what you want to happen, what the end goal is. It's important, very important. If not, don't go ahead. But we all know in order to get to that goal, you need to create a bias, you need to create an outer structure for it. And that's very challenging. What do we begin with? It depends. Mishkan Lamayla, Mishkan Lamata. When you're talking about your vision on paper, what do you start with? You start with your vision, your mission statement. But Mishkan Lamata, when you have to get to it, you can't start with your vision ever. That's what's so frustrating. Saif Maiseh b'machshav tchila. But that's Saif Maiseh. The last thing I do is my first machshava. I want to build a house in my thought. I have this beautiful house. The way I want it to be. What I want people should feel when they walk into it. But in reality, you can't start with that. In reality, you have to start with headaches of details. So Moshe speaks first of the Kelim. He speaks about the Avoda Pnimis, the substance, what's going to take place in the Mishkan. The actual Avoda HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But Sala, in implementation, says it doesn't work that way. Minig HaOilam, what's Minig HaOilam? Oilam is from the word Helam. In this concealed world, Minig HaOilam, we can't jump to the Kelim. First you need a Bayis. You got to go through the frustrations of structures. Every art, every piece of art needs a frame. And Moshe's response is, B'tzel Kel Ha'isa. You were in the shadow of Hashem. What's a shadow? What's a shadow created of? A shadow is when the light that shines is obstructed, it creates a shadow. So there's light, but the light is being obstructed. The way God's light comes into this world where the light is obstructed, Oilam Milashen Helam. That's Bezalel. He builds the Mishkan in this world, Bezalel came in the shadow of Hashem. And in the shadow, you don't have the pure light. You have the light shining with all of the obstructions and concealments and challenges of this world. But this is the Mishkan of Ayakut Kudet. And this is the Mishkan of Bezalel. And this is the Mishkan where the Shekhinah dwells. And this Mishkan is celebrated not only because it's a copy of the first Mishkan. No, this Mishkan is celebrated in and of itself because the Ribbono Shel Olam didn't want holy people doing holy things. He wanted unholy people doing holy things. He didn't want perfect hearts and perfect minds and perfect couples and perfect souls creating a perfect paradise and an impeccable structure in the world. Yes, it should be as perfect, as impeccable as it can be. But the value of life is that we introduce godliness into our fragmented souls, into our broken spirits, into our lowly moments, into our difficult challenges, into our terrible habits. We bring holiness into unholiness. We transform a mortal, fragmented, broken world and make it a dira lo yizbara b'tachtayna mahom. That's the Mishkan of Ayachah Shuri. If that's the case, we can understand very well what the Yerushalmi says about the correlation between the 18 Kasher Tziva Hashem Es Moishes in Pkudei and Shmoneh Esrei. Because what is tefillah? What is davening? Sula Mutzav Arza V'roishe Magiyah Hashemayim. So the Zohar HaKadosh says that's the four rungs of prayer, the ladder of prayer from earth going to heaven. That's what prayer is. Prayer is Sula Mutzav Arza. The ladder is standing on earth and the person begins climbing. Tefillah is from the word HaToifel Klei Cheres, which means to connect, to unite. A person on earth, physical, narcissistic, materialistic, downtrodden, dejected, starts climbing the ladder every day to find the light within themselves, to find the presence of Hashem, to find their own soul, their core. And that's the ladder of davening. That's the Mishkan of what? Of Ayakel and Pkudei, which begins on earth, and it climbs to heaven throughout all the brachas of Shmoneh Esrei, which include all of the needs that people have, from Das to Refuah, to Tshuva, to Slach Lanu, etc., Parnasa, prosperity, and all of the brachas of Shmoneh Esrei. So that, those 18 blessings, parallel the Kasher Tzivu Hashem Es Moshe from Pekudei, that what was the Tzivu, what was the commandment? The commandment was for this Mishkan. The commandment was uttered in spiritual word, but what was the commandment intended for? It was intended for this Mishkan, not for that Mishkan. This is the Mishkan he desires. This is what Tfilah is. And that's why he doesn't do the first pasuk. The first pasuk with Bezalel represents Bezalel himself. What's after that? V'itoy Ahaliyah v'nachisamach l'mat edom. So Chazal say, Bezalel came from Yehuda, Ahaliyah came from Dan. Yehuda was the Miyuchas. Dan was very different than Yehuda. To show that in building a Mishkan, there's no Yichas to Bezalel over Ahaliyah. So where do we start Shmoneh Esrei? Only when you include Ahaliyah. Only when you're ready, when you think that you're always in a state of Yehuda, in on a sublime, elevated state, that's not the Mishkan. Shmoneh Esrei begins when you include Aliyah, when you include the lower components of your personality, and you realize that it's all part of your journey, and all part of your shlichus, and all part of your mission. That the Ribbono Shel Olam wants you to be a Mishkan. You with your heart and your limitations and your fluctuations, v'itay ahaliyav, and that's why the Arizal says famously before davening, he says, "Nachin loymar koydem atfila, hareini mekabel alay mitzvahs esei shel v'aftal reecha kamoicha." If Bezalel is not ready to connect to ahaliyav and lift up the lowest of the low, he's not ready for tefillah, including within himself. If you're not ready to embrace the lowest of the low and make it a Mishkan, you're not ready for the Mishkan. That's the Kasher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe. That was the commandment that Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu. You know, they say, I once heard a Maisa, I didn't verify its source, so Maisa. Certainly the message is very profound and real. So there was a Belzer couple. They were engaged to be married. And then they got married. And a few days later, began the transportations. And they both ended up, the young husband, the young wife, the Belzer Hasidim, they both ended up in Auschwitz. Of course, they were separated, and each one assumed the other one didn't survive. But when the Russians liberated Auschwitz, actually exactly 70 years ago, they saw each other. And they met after a very long time. Now remember, I heard this from a few survivors. Many of them, who were in camps for years, didn't know what they looked like. There were no mirrors. And people didn't tell the other person, let me tell you what you look like. So they saw what other people looked like, so they could imagine. But many people didn't see what they looked like for years. They were together, they were so excited to have each other. Newly married, you know, newlyweds, they both survived, they couldn't believe it. And they ran into a nearby house, which was the house of one of the SS commanders, and he fled, they went into a house. And there was a mirror there. And she looked into the mirror. Now she was a very, very beautiful woman. The Torah says about Rachel, Yafas Toyev, Yafas Mara, that was this woman. She was beautiful, stunning. And then she looks in the mirror, and she sees what she looks like. a skeleton, emaciated face, emaciated body. Of course, all the hair was gone. And he looks into the mirror and he sees what he looks like. So the maisa is that she looked at him and she said, "You know, you always told me that I'm beautiful, but you cherish me. Can you still cherish me? Can you still believe I'm beautiful now?" And he responded and he said, "You were never as beautiful as you look right now. This beauty I've never seen before. Such powerful and profound beauty." And she repeated the story what her husband said. What's the beauty he was referring to? That's the Mishkan Lamach. There's beauty that comes from heavenliness. There's beauty that comes from perfection. But there's another type of beauty. There's the beauty that comes from a person who confronts the angel of death and doesn't surrender. There's the person who stands up to the greatest challenges of life and retains that sense of dignity, of idealism, of purity, of confidence, of happiness, of wholesomeness, of optimism. That's the Mishkan Lamata. That's not in the Mishkan Lamayla. It's a different Mishkan, it's a different creature. That's the Mishkan where the Shekhinah comes into. That you can't just say they did that Mishkan. It's a new creature, it's a new Mishkan. That's the uniqueness of this Mishkan, that it's built up from Tachpin Shabbatachpin. It's made up of stuff that we would dismiss as negative and inconsequential and foolish and superficial and stupidity. But it's that stupidity from which we create a Mishkan for the Ribbono Shel Olam. When we turn it around, when we harness it into Avodas Hashem, when we use those very foolish, maybe stupid, maybe evil instincts and say, "I'm going to serve God with this." How? By not surrendering to it, by not succumbing to it, by working with it, by dealing with it, by transforming it, by subduing it, by confronting it, etc. They say he came to the Rujiner and he told the Helik Rujiner that he doesn't have time to learn. Now he's very busy in his business, but he hopes, like many Jews say, he's going to retire and sell his business and then he's going to learn. So the Rujiner quoted the famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, but he gave it a twist. The Mishnah says, don't say when I have time I'm going to learn, you may never have time. Which of course we all know how acute that observation is. When do you have time? You never have time. Life gets busier and busier and busier. They say life is what's happening while you're preparing to live one day. Life doesn't start, you know, when you marry off your 8 o'clock and move to Palm Beach. Life happens when there's a lot of screaming in the house. That's what life is. That's the Mishkan Lamata, not the Mishkan Lamayla. That's where the Mishkan happens. Not, you know, after, everything is perfect, impeccable, everybody graduated, everybody leaves the home. Now, suddenly, I start living. That's not life. That's delusional life. Life is now, right here and now. In whatever reality, that's the Mishkan Lamata. The real world is of the Tcheles, the Arkamot, the Lashon, the Yatzik, Shittim, Aliyah, Betzal. So the Rishna says, don't say when you have time and you'll be stress-free, you're going to learn. Maybe the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't want you should learn Torah when you have free time. Maybe the Torah that he wants from you is when you're busy, when you're stressed. Maybe that's the Torah he wants from you. How do you know the Torah he wants from you is the Torah when you're blissfully free, stress-free? Maybe this is the Torah he wants from you. Maybe that brach, maybe that kvetch, maybe that Torah he wants from you. So now, we come back to Purim. Take a look at your last source, Kalim Perek Yitzayin Mishnah Yudalit. Fascinating, fascinating Mishnah in Kalim. As an intro, and here we do a Torah from the Yid HaKadosh. The Yid HaKadosh was Rabbi Yaakov Yitzchak Rabinowitz. Yaakov Yitzchak Rabinowitz passed away in Tovkuf Ayin Dalet, 1813, Yutes Tishrei, middle of Sukkot. He's known as the Yid HaKadosh, the Rebbe of Pshischa in Poland. Everyone knows those who followed him. You had Reb Simcha Binim of Pshischa, the Kotzke Rebbe. These all come from the Yid HaKadosh. The Yid HaKadosh said a Torah. He asked a question. Yom Kippur is like Purim. Yom HaKippurim, says in Zohar, Tikuni Zohar. In today's calendar, in today's structure of the Jewish calendar, which days can Yom Kippur fall out, and which days can Purim fall out? Can Yom Kippur be on Shabbos? Yeah. Can Purim be on Shabbos? No. Purim was ever on Shabbos? No.
Only Thursday.
Huh?
Thursday.
Right. Yom Kippur Shabbos? No Purim Shabbos. Can Purim be on Sunday? Of course. Remember, Matzai Shabbos, you go read the Megillah. Yom Kippur, never on Sunday. Can Purim be on Monday? You'll never have a Purim on Monday, you'll have a Yom Kippur on Monday. What about Tuesday? Topsy-turvy. Tuesday, you'll never have a Yom Kippur, you'll have Purim. Wednesday, you'll have Yom Kippur, you'll never have Purim. We'll skip Thursday for a moment, because it's too fresh, it's not fair. Friday, can you have Purim on Friday? You remember Purim on Friday? The Suda, right? It's always a Lebedeke Suda. Purim on Friday. Will you have Yom Kippur on Friday? Never. Shabbos, we already said. Yom Kippur, no Purim. So the Yiddish Kaddish says, this is funny. Yom Kippur is like Purim, but they'll never meet. They'll never be in the same day. Again, Sunday, Purim, no Yom Kippur. Monday, Yom Kippur, no Purim. Tuesday, Purim, no Yom Kippur. Wednesday, Yom Kippur, no Purim. Friday, Purim, no Yom Kippur. Shabbos, Yom Kippur, no Purim. So one day is the exception. Thursday. Thursday, you can have a Yom Kippur on Thursday, and you can have a Purim on Thursday. In fact, we all just celebrated Purim last Thursday. What's Pshat? Zakhdi Yidah Kaddish, it's a Mishnah in Kalim, Perek Yitzayim, Mishnah Dalet, take a look, your last source. V'yesh b'mesh nivre b'yoyim harishin t'meya. I have to thank Rabbi Yanky Tversky, who showed me this Yidah Kaddish a few days ago, Erev Purim. V'yesh b'mesh nivre b'yoyim harishin t'meya. Barsheni ain't by tuma, Bishlishi yesh by tuma, Birvi bechamishi ain't bem tuma, chutz mi kama foiz, u beitas namis amitsupa. Says the Mishnah in Kalim, go and look through the 7 days of creation and you'll see. Sunday the Rebbeinu Shel Olam created something that's susceptible to spiritual impurity, tuma. Bereishis bara lekimas hashamayim, that's earth. If you make a clay cheres, you make an earthenware vessel, it's makabel tuma. Let's say it's under the same tent like a corpse, or it touches something that's tame, and it goes into the avir, the inside the keli, a tuma goes into the interior space of the keli cheres, it's tame. So Sunday has something susceptible to tuma. What about Monday? What did Hashem create Monday? Yihi rakia b'toich hashamayim, He created the firmament in the heaven. The firmament in the heaven doesn't get tummy. What about Tuesday? Tuesday he created what? All of the vegetation, all of the produce, right? All vegetables, all fruits, all fruit, everything that comes from the ground. Trees and everything else. Is food makabel tuma? Of course. Clayates, if you make clayates, right, with a clay kibble, you have a vessel, a receptacle of wood. Comes from a tree, it's makabel tuma. Food, of course, is makabel tuma. What about Wednesday? Wednesday he created the heavenly galaxies, the sun, the moon, the lunar system, the solar system. No tuma over there. What about Thursday? Let's skip Thursday. Friday he created man, and he created animals, mammals. Of course they're makabel tuma. Person is makabel tuma. A behemoth could become tuma. A behemoth could cause tuma. If you make kalim of it, it becomes tumah. What about Shabbos? Shabbos, there's no tumah. What about Thursday? Thursday created fish, there's no tumah. And he also created birds, there's no tumah. However, there's two types of birds that the rabbis were goyzer that if you make kalim of the skin of these birds, the kalim on the kabbal tumah midrabbana. That's what the Mishnah says. Knafoiz and beitzes namis amitzupa. That these two types of birds, so if you make kalim from them, they're makabel tuma Thursday, only midrabban. Says the Yidah Kaddish, this is the difference between Yom Kippur and Purim. Yom Kippur could be on Shabbos, Yom Kippur could be on Monday, on Wednesday. Why? Because Yom Kippur transcends the world of tuma. Yom Kippur is the world of holiness. Yom Kippur is Achas Bashana. Yom Kippur is the day when the Jew becomes like an angel. It's beyond Tumah. So therefore it falls out on those days that are completely aloof and oblivious to Tumah. What about Purim? Purim is the opposite idea of Yom Kippur. The Chiddush, the novelty of Purim is that a Jew reveals his oneness with God in the Makam HaTumah. in a place and a world of impurity, in a condition of impurity. That's where the Jew reveals his dveikus with Hashem. So that's why when is Purim? Precisely on Sunday, precisely on Tuesday, Dafka on Friday, days when they are mekabel tumah, because that's what Purim accomplishes. What about Thursday? Thursday is the only day that can have both, because Yom Kippur is a holiday min haTorah, and min haTorah Thursday doesn't have anything that's mekabel tumah. So therefore, it's a day that's aloof from tumah. Purim is a holiday midivrei soifrim. Midivrei soifrim, Thursday does have something that's mekabel tumah. So therefore, Thursday is suitable for Purim. So that's why Purim has an advantage over Yom Kippur, the similar advantage that the Mishkan Lamata has over the Mishkan Lamaila. Yom Kippur, you're on the mountain, literally. You're on the peak of the mountain. You're an angel. You deal with words, with thoughts, with machshava, with dibur, with tshuva, with tefillah. That's Yom Kippur, beyond Tumah. Purim, we say, Chayiv inish lebesumim bepuria ada lo yada. Purim, the mitzvah is mishta v'yom to feast and party and shleich mamas. It's the day that's met in many ways the most physical day in the Jewish calendar. There's not only a focus on eating. That's always by Jews. Even the Shia. That's always. They try to kill us. We won. Now let's go eat. And even when we finally have one day when we believe in not eating Yom Kippur, there's a mitzvah to eat out of Yom Kippur. And Mitzvah Yom Kippur is a Gresa Yom Tov with more food. It's not just Purim we eat. Purim is a day when you're very deeply entrenched in the world. You're social, you're with friends. Matanis Lav Yoinim, there's the element of camaraderie, of being integrated in society, part of your body, in your body, to the point of intoxication of the Summa B'Purim. That's the Chiddush of Purim. Purim is Megala, the Dveikus, with the Rebbeinu Shel Olam within. Within the physicality, within the materialism, within the struggles, within the brokenness of the human condition and the human imagination, in the place of Tumah. That's what Purim is. And that's the advantage of Purim over Yom Kippur. That's why Yom HaKippurim is Yom Kippurim. That's the Mishnah Lamat. So in summation, let's make a 30-second summary. We began with the question of why it says 18 or 19 times Kashetziva Hashem Es Moshe in Parashat Pekudei. We brought the Yerushalmi, who equates it with prayer, but only delete counts the last 18 and deletes the first one with Bezalel without the mention of Aliyah. We went into the explanation of the Beis Halevi, and in a similar vein, the explanation of the Meshech Chochma, the Arisameh, who explains that the function of the Chet HaEgel was not to replace God or deny God, but on the contrary, to be able to create a vehicle for the Ribbono Shel Olam, like the Mishkan, through the golden calf, as a result of Aaron's leadership. The mistake is what? The only way you can make a place for Hashras Hashem is if Hashem chooses a place, if Hashem defines the mechanism. I can't do it, you can't do it, even Moshe and Aaron cannot do it. Once heard from the Pinchas Hirschsprung, the chief rabbi of Montreal, the Pinchas Hirschsprung, Zechonu Livracha, he once said, they wanted somebody instead of Moshe. They wanted a new Rebbe, basically. They wanted a new Rebbe. So go to Aaron. Go to Aaron. He was a prophet. Go to Aaron. Tell Aaron, we want you. Not a calf. We want you. So he said, not a kalb. Not a kalb. Ken gloibin as erken zainam amalamokim from Moshe Rabbeinu. Only a calf can believe that he can be a successor of Moshe Rabbeinu. So the Beis Halevi says, that's what they wanted. They wanted a Moshe Rabbeinu. They wanted a Mishkan. They wanted a place where Shechinah Medaberes. There was only one challenge. Beautiful intentions. Hashem did not tell you to do it. You cannot define where God is going to be. That's the power of a mitzvah. That's the power of a mitzvah. It's on top of the mountain. The Svasemis is Maisa. That's why in Pekudei, the Mishkan, which atones for the Egel, Kashetziva Hashem is Moshe, 18 times, 19 times, every item, what's the value? Not that it's golden, not that it's spiritual, not that it's mystical, Kashetziva Hashem is Moshe. From there we went to the question of, why the redundancy? You have Trumat Tzava, why do you need Vayakal? Clearly the whole thing seems excessive. We discussed the answer of the Bris Kirov, who explains that what? That the Jews did it meticulously the way the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted, even though there was no chiyuv, as the Gemara says in Chayrus, e'ef shel tzamtzum. And then we went to the final explanation of the Chassidus, which was an explanation that was presented by the Lubavitcher Rebbe in a Fabrengen Shabbos Parshas by Yaakov Kudei Tovshin Yud Ches, 1958, published in his Likutei Sichas, Volume 1, I think Volume 1, Parshas Pekudei, who explains the Yesod is what? It's two separate Mishkans. There's the spiritual Mishkan made out of the Ribbono Shel Olam's words. There's the physical Mishkan made out of people in the sand, out of physical materials. And the value, the ultimate objective, the ultimate value is in the latter Mishkan, made of the physical world through physical people. That's where the Shekhinah dwells, and that's where the Shekhinah wants, not only as a poor replica, but as the ultimate objective of all of creation, all of the cosmos, which is the essence of what Tefillah is versus Torah, and that's the 18 blessings of Tefillah, but it only begins once Bezalel joins with Ahaliyav and lifts up Ahaliyav, and that's the ultimate Tachlis, and that's why Purim is greater than Yom Kippur, as the Yid HaKadosh says, the days that are Mekabel Tuma to transform the Tuma into Tara. Have a wonderful week. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.